Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
Good evening. April 20th, the day after Patriots Day. Hope you had a good Patriots Day yesterday. If you didn't know, you'll know for next year. April 19th is Patriots Day. So, let's get started here. I'm John Jeffers, your host, founder, and executive producer here at the Contra Radio Network, and having my own show, The Jeffers Brief. Welcome to it. Tonight, let's talk about some prepper stuff. Yes, we are also going to talk about some Patriot things too. First things first, let's talk about training for a gunfight. This is from Final Prepper. This is interesting stuff. You need to know it. You need to practice it. Know it, learn it, live it. Alexander Kane is the author. A key but often neglected part of having firearms in your prepping plans is practice. Many people practice thousands of dollars worth of weapons with the intention of using these in a life and death situation. The truth of the matter is that when you are actually in a life and death situation, your skill is dramatically reduced. The confidence you had with that weapon is gone, and fear and stress kick in big time. It is at this most critical time that your skill level and proficiency need to be the highest they can be. But the reality is, we are able to muster a fraction of it. Now, practicing with your pistols before there is an emergency is vital to improving your chances of successfully living to talk about it. If you're going into a gunfight, you need to be training for a gunfight. Now, we're going to outline some steps and exercises you can follow to become more proficient, to increase muscle memory, and hopefully increase your odds of hitting what you are shooting at, which is the true definition of gun control, before it hits you. Now, practice these drills as often as you can. They could mean the difference between life and death. The crush grip. The crush grip is one of the elements of Masoud Ayoub's 5-point pre-flight checklist, compromising the fundamentals of solid combat handgun marksmanship. That comes from Ayoub in 2012. When a shooter uses a crush grip or hand grasp on the handgun with the thumbs curled down, the curled thumbs promote a stronger and tighter grasp. Thumbs curled down do not shift the windage of one's muzzle direction. My experience and results with my students validate that one can shoot with combat accuracy with such a grip. Furthermore, as demonstrated in Masoud Ayoub's Stress Fire Combat Handgun Training Program. If you want to look him up, it's masoudayoubgroup.com. If you're not sure how to spell it, M-A-S-S-A-D, capital A-Y-O-O-B, group.com. Now, Stress Fire Combat Handgun Training Program, when a shooter intentionally gorilla grips the handgun to the point of tremor, the resulting wobble zone results in shot groupings on a target at combat distances that are still within a combat accuracy acceptable 3 to 4 inches. The wobble zone, everybody has it. You can't get rid of it. Don't try. Just accept it. Everybody wobbles. Everybody. That's because you can't control your heartbeat. You can't control your pulse. You can't control the blood coursing through your body. You're breathing. You got to breathe. So those slight tremors cause a wobble. If you could somehow stop breathing, stop the blood from flowing, stop your heart from beating, stop your pulses from beating, guess what? You would not have a wobble, in which case we would think you're a Cylon and we'll destroy you. However, there is that one other essential point. The harder you grasp the handgun, the better you will control the gun. So also, the harder you grasp, the easier it is to isolate your trigger finger. Just perform this little experiment. Make a loose fist with your dominant hand and keep your thumb pointed forward. Now, extend your trigger finger and press your trigger finger to the rear just as if you are working a trigger. If you watch your hand as you do this, you may notice that as you work your trigger finger, your other fingers are also moving. You have not completely isolated the movement of your trigger finger from the rest of your hand. This is called milking. And if you do this while you are shooting, it typically results in shots that are low and to the left. Low and to the left. Now, make a much tighter fist and curl your thumb down. When you extend your trigger finger and press it to the rear now, as if you're working the trigger, you will notice that your other tightly clasped fingers do not move in unison. You have now isolated your trigger finger. This is one of the advantages of a crush grip. The importance of combat shooting program emphasizes techniques that depend on simple gross motor skills as opposed to complex fine motor skills, since fine motor skills deteriorate under life and death stress. It is my position that we should practice defensive shooting in ways which are consistent with what happens physically and psychologically if we are fighting for our life. These techniques should feed off the effects of the body alarm reaction and become more effective under stress. They must be simple, gross motor techniques that can withstand the tremors and increase physical strength attendant to the body alarm triggered adrenaline dump into the bloodstream. A crush grip does this. Now, can we find and should we train for a gunfight? My position on the matter is that we can train for when the proverbial balloon goes up and that we should maximize our training time by building skills that we might have to use in a deadly force situation. After all, we carry guns because we just might have to use them in defense of life. Therefore, we had better prepare ourselves for running drills that build skills which might actually use for real. So the question is how to train for the gunfight. Now, I've developed a practice drill regimen that runs through some of the core elements of combat shooting. It is doable in a lane in an indoor range. I use this practice drill regimen for my own skills maintenance, and I teach it to my private students. I will outline it here. It requires 100 rounds, or two boxes of ammunition, two boxes of 50 rounds each. Training for a gunfight means building skills you will need if you are in an armed confrontation. First and foremost, you will need basic, good marksmanship skills because advanced combat shooting skills involve solid applications and, in some cases, modifications of the basic skills. Thus, you must master the basics. Got it? These include a solid power stance, a solid and stable crush grip on the gun, acquisition and maintenance of good sight alignment and sight picture, good trigger control and trigger reset, and good follow-through. Second, you will need good point shooting and retention shooting skills. There will be no time to take your time. You need to be able to fire multiple shots fast and accurately close in because most gunfights happen within 9 feet. And third, you will need to move. The person who stays planted is going nowhere fast and, in fact, may get planted. Conversely, the person who moves rapidly is more likely to emerge from the fight alive. So drill one, basic marksmanship drill, two-handed grip, 30 rounds. Every trip to the range for practice should include practicing basic marksmanship to refresh and strengthen the fundamentals. Advanced skills build on the basics. The first drill is a primer. I typically run at least 30 rounds through my primary defensive handgun at 5, 7, 10, 15, and 20 to 25 yards. The handgun is brought on target either from the low ready, combat ready, compressed combat ready positions, or the holster. Typically, I begin shooting close in to build confidence and then increase my target distances. Basic marksmanship means employing what? The fundamentals. Power stance, hard two-handed grasp on the handgun, good sight alignment and sight picture, good trigger control and follow through. Give the bullet time to leave the barrel before the trigger reset and preparing for the follow-up shot. For this drill, I am aiming for precision accuracy. I am essentially running the one-hole drill or focus drill that I have described in previous articles. This is a take as much as time as you need drill to get all shots in one hole using basics of good marksmanship. Drill 2, marksmanship drill, one-handed grip, 20 rounds. This drill is the same as the above drill, incorporating all the fundamentals, except from now you are shooting one-handed at various distances, alternating between your dominant and non-dominant hands. When you shoot one-handed, it is important to grip your handgun even harder as you only have one hand on the gun. The harder you grasp, the better you will control the gun. Also, the harder you grasp, as we illustrated above, the easier it is to isolate your trigger finger. Movement. The above two drills use up a box of 50 rounds of ammunition. The drills to follow require another 50 rounds. The following drills should incorporate movement at least some of the time that you run them, to the extent that the range will allow it. Obviously, if you're working in an indoor range in a lane, your movement will be minimal. Basically, when you are not shooting, you should be moving. A noted defensive firearms trainer, John Farnham, is fond of repeating, "Don't just stand there like a potted palm. If you present a static target in a real fight, you just might get planted." So, movement should be incorporated into your gun presentation. Your draw from the holster and movement should follow each string of shots. Don't just stand there. When you get good, if you get a chance to go to an outdoor range, you might be able to shoot and walk at the same time, shoot and move at the same time. That is skill. I could do it some, personally, I can do it some of the time. I can't do it all the time. I could do it some of the time. More often than not, I gotta be honest with you, my shots are wide. I'm missing the target. So, anyways, because don't forget, when you're moving, you're going up and down and to the side, and you're trying to get a shot off. You know, so it can be done, but it takes some practice, guys. Get back to it. Drill 3. Draw and shoot two-handed from the compressed ready to full extension, 20 rounds. Drill 5. As you aim through point shooting at the target, you are shooting up the target from your initial point of aim, point of impact, sort of like a zipper. In a real gunfight, you will be firing multiple shots. Typically, the fight will begin close in. To prevail and survive, you need to get hits on your assailant before he hits you, i.e., he who hits first wins. And you need to move away from your assailant as you are doing so. Distance is your friend. This drill is run at 3, 5, and 7 yards. You begin from two-handed compressed ready. When you give yourself the go signal, start shooting from the compressed ready and fire 2 to 3 additional shots as you push your gun out to full extension. In a fight, you'll be extending the gun as you fire and simultaneously move away from your assailant. Note, your first shot at compressed ready should be taken with your hands at least 6 inches in front of your chest so that the rear end of the cycling slide will not hit your chest. And if it doesn't hit your, and if it does hit your chest, you're going to have a probably a malfunction. That is a feed malfunction. Drill 4. Elbow up, elbow down, one-handed point shooting from the hip, 10 rounds. In this drill, you practice drawing from the holster strong side and shooting from retention, which in this drill is the one-quarter hip retention position. As soon as the gun is pointed at the target, a total of 10 rounds will be fired. This drill should be perfected first without movement. Once you are comfortable with the drill, then you can incorporate movement. However, if you are shooting on an indoor range on a lane, it may not be safe to incorporate movement into this drill. This is the flow sequence broken down into steps. Number 1. Acquire a combat grip on the holstered handgun. Number 2. Your elbow swings up as you draw the gun vertically and clear the mouth of the holster with the muzzle. Number 3. Your elbow swings down as you rock your forearm up toward the target with your arm in the one-quarter hip retention position. Number 4. You fire one shot as soon as your muzzle is pointed at your aim point on the target. It is very important to maintain a crushed grip on the gun as you run this drill. By doing so, you will have more control over the gun. Drill number 5, the zipper, 20 rounds. The drill is an extension of drill 4. Now, in this drill, you draw from the holster strong side, begin shooting from the one-quarter hip retention position as soon as the gun is pointed at the target, and continue firing as you push the gun out toward the target through the half hip, three-quarter hip, and full extension positions. This is called the zipper because as you aim through point shooting at the target, you are shooting up the target from your initial point of aim or point of impact, sort of like a zipper. Again, we are practicing getting multiple shots at speed into our assailant. You should start running this drill slowly and gradually build up speed over several sessions. It is important to do it smoothly in one continuous flow. Here, you should flow like water. Remember that initially, at least, slow is smooth, and eventually fast, effective, and coordinated is always smooth. Recognize in reality, you would only extend your gun as you are firing as far as you can safely can in order to maintain good gun retention. If you are too close to your opponent and you extend your gun too far forward toward your opponent as you are firing, you may end up giving your gun to your assailant or his partner. This drill should be performed without movement while you are shooting, as with all the above drills. Give yourself time to become proficient at this drill before you incorporate movement into your draw from the holster again. Again, if you are shooting on an indoor range with lanes, it may not be safe to incorporate movement into this drill. So it is very important to maintain a crush grip on the gun throughout the shooting sequence, especially when you are practicing this technique. If you do not gorilla grip your handgun, you will not have as much control over it as you need to have. Now, this is the flow sequence for drill 5, broken down into steps. Number 1, acquire a combat grip on the holstered handgun. 2, your elbow swings up as you draw the gun up vertically and clear the mouth of the holster with the muzzle. Number 3, your elbow swings down as you rock your forearm up toward the target. Number 4, you fire your first shot as soon as your muzzle is pointed at your point of aim on the target and when your arm is 1/4 hip position. You continue firing as you push the gun out toward the target through the half hip, 3/4 hip, and full extension position. Summary. This is the summary. Train for a gunfight means practicing drills and incorporate skills you will need if you are in an armed confrontation. First of all, you need good basic marksmanship skills. Advanced combat shooting skills involve solid applications and, in some cases, modifications of the basic skills. You must master the basics as discussed above. And that is why my practice regimen includes a basic marksmanship component. Second, you need good point shooting and retention shooting skills. Armed confrontations and gunfights typically happen in seconds. There is no time to take your time. You need to be able to shoot multiple shots fast and accurately. Most gunfights happen within 9 feet. You will most likely be fighting one or more assailants who are coming toward you, so you will need to hold on to your gun tightly, crush grip, retention position, and fire multiple shots. Third, you will need to move, so you need to incorporate movement into your drills. The person who stays planted is going nowhere fast and, in fact, may get planted. Conversely, the person who moves rapidly is more likely to emerge the fight alive. The drills described above that I have talked about incorporate all of these elements. What do you think? Yes? Like it? Good information, right? That's because I provide good information here on Contra Radio Network. Feel free to go to Patreon.com and subscribe monthly. Give me $2 a month for it. Come on. Or you can go to Podbean.com. We've already had a couple listeners throw in a monthly donation there. That works too. Next, we are going to talk about, now we've all seen the headlines about Rudy Giuliani joining the Trump legal team. Now we're going to talk about some Patriot stuff. Why? Because CRN is for discerning preppers and patriots. So you're probably trying to think of negotiate what? There's nothing to negotiate. I agree. But perhaps we're looking at the term negotiate in the wrong way, the wrong context. So let me get this out there for you, because I want you to understand this, all right? It's not going to be a surrender negotiation, at least not on Trump's part. So let's get this out. This is from Sundance. Sundance has put this out. After reading it, I understand now what they mean by negotiation phase. And guess who has the upper hand? It ain't Mueller, that's for sure. Now, former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani previously served as the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. He told the Washington Post, "I'm doing it because I hope we can negotiate an end to this for the good of the country and because I have high regard for the president and for Bob Mueller," Giuliani said in an interview. Yeah, he's got high regard for him. Giuliani joining team to negotiate the exit of Special Counsel Robert Mueller is confirmation of earlier analysis of Mueller referee intent. The investigative and indictment balance was always between Hillary Clinton allies and President Donald Trump. Mueller was recruited by Clinton and Washington, D.C. allies and those within the small group, and was and is generally facilitating the investigation of Trump as leverage. Look, I don't care what Rosensnake says about Trump not being a target. He's always been the target. So if you look at Robert Mueller from the position of trying to protect his cherished deep state institutions from horrible Trump swamp draining, things began to take a more accurate context. Now, this is where we're talking about the negotiating. The only way for Mueller to protect his swamp allies and institutions was to generate leverage against Trump. Having established only political leverage, nothing factually unlawful or illegal, the Mueller investigation begins to dry up, hence leverage diminishes. Without direct leverage against President Trump, Team Mueller moved to position leverage against those Trump cares about. Now, that's a secondary approach. But the secondary leverage approach is fraught with public noting Mueller is on a witch hunt. The investigation to outlying Trump allies becomes transparent in motive. Support for Mueller erodes amid independent-minded people. So, enter Rudy Giuliani, a political and legal subject matter expert with direct knowledge of evidence held by NYPD and the New York FBI field office for gross criminal conduct by Hillary Clinton and the Wiener laptop, etc., buried by the SDNY Clinton allies. Southern District of New York, SDNY. With Special Counsel Mueller having exhausted most of his investigative leverage, Giuliani enters to negotiate Mueller's exit and discuss his team's path of retreat and image face-saving. Now, the discussion from Mueller's perspective will not center around Trump, but rather center around how much risk to Hillary Clinton, and by extension, political allies within the FBI and DOJ, including Obama White House, Mueller will permit. Now, Mueller will be looking to protect the interests of Obama, Clinton, Lynch, Comey, Brennan, Clapper, etc., and negotiating degrees of risk to the institutions each represents. This is the political horse trading phase. The leverage cards held by each participant are laid on the table for discussion. Low leverage officials will be sacrificed by Mueller to protect those holding more leverage. Giuliani is a well-qualified person to present the Trump administration position within these negotiations. They are essentially negotiating who faces criminal prosecution and who doesn't. Ultimately, protecting Obama and Clinton will be of higher importance to Mueller. If Mueller doesn't protect Clinton, he knows her teams will destroy everyone if she goes down. Now, that scorched earth approach is a historic part of Team Clinton's leverage. The stronger the evidence is against Clinton, the more people Mueller will have to give up to protect her. The stronger the evidence against corrupt institutions, the bigger the officials Mueller will have to sacrifice to save them. Negotiating all this with Robert Mueller will likely be Rudy Giuliani's primary job. It's likely the general public will never know the ultimate deal decisions. We will only be able to gauge the scale of corruption by the officials Mueller agrees to sacrifice. And he's already going to sacrifice McCabe, and he's going to sacrifice Comey. Those are the first two on there. So think about it. That's what they're talking about this negotiation. If Mueller wants to protect Obama, and he wants to protect the Clintons, especially the Clintons, he's got to give up a whole bunch of underlings in order to do that. So if you're an underling, guess what? You're going to be sold out. Whether you like it or not, that's what's going to happen. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, baby, that's what I'm talking about. That's what's happening. Now, Now, as we all, if you, today, it's the DOJ Inspector General is investigating Comey for release of classified memos. Again, that's the Inspector General's Michael Horowitz. And this is what's going to, this is what it looks like so far. Again, this is from Sundance. He's rocking and rolling. She's rocking and rolling this thing. I don't know. So, according to Fox News, Catherine Herridge reporting, Inspector General Michael Horowitz is investigating the unauthorized distribution of classified memos by former FBI Director James Comey. Obviously, we all know that. If you don't know that, you haven't been paying attention, or you're a rock, and you're probably a liberal, and just, you won't believe anything, no matter how bad it is. You will always find an excuse not to believe it. So the Wall Street Journal is also reporting that two of the four memos Director Comey gave to his friend Daniel Richmond contained classified information. That's right. So, according to the Wall Street Journal report, at least two of the memos that former FBI Director James Comey gave to a friend outside of the government contained information that officials now consider classified, according to people familiar with the matter, prompting a review by the Justice Department's internal watchdog. Yeah. How's your book tour going now, pal? It is further reported that James Comey redacted elements of one memo himself in an effort to protect secrets before he handed the documents over to his friend Daniel Richmond. Comey made the self-determination that no other memo contained classified information. However, after he left the FBI, officials upgraded the second memo content to confidential after a review. Kind of like, it's kind of like closing the barn door after the, you know, after the cows are out. So, DOJ Inspector General Michael Horowitz is now conducting an investigation into the releases of the memos and the overall circumstances surrounding the releases. Previously, Comey stated he considered the memos personal records and not government documents. He told Congress he wrote them and authorized their release to the media as a private citizen. Oh, yeah. No, sorry, that doesn't meet the standard. Nice try. And the reason that they're not personal records, one, he was on government time, using government property, using resource, government resources. Guess what? That belongs to the government. For example, when I was working in the sheriff's office, whatever report we wrote, even though we took the call, we did the interviewing, we wrote the report and submitted it. That, and our name is on it. That report belongs to the county, not me. Could I get a copy of it? Yeah. But whatever happens to that report is up to the county. It's the county's property. If does that kind of help explain it somewhat? Okay. Mr. Comey gave four told memos to Columbia Law School professor Daniel Richmond. In an earlier congressional review of the issues, Senator Chuck Grassley reviewed all of the memos and submitted questions to the DOJ about the classification issues. During the Grassley review, three memos were considered unclassified at the time, and one was said to contain classified information. So there you have it. There you go. There it is. See, I told you, I'm going to keep you guys up to date on what's happening here. I'm trying not to repeat, you know, the stuff we've seen on the news, because most of it, you know. Now, here's something interesting that's just released, I guess, by Sundance. It's anatomy of a political smear confirmed. James Comey, January briefing, was scripted by Clapper and Brennan to create a media narrative. Oh, no. So, let me take a quick look here, see if it's well worth going over, or we can wait on it. I'll do another episode tomorrow. We got to get this one out here, but it's a little bit too long for our time constraints for tonight. Anyways, that's what we got going on. Feel free to donate a couple bucks a month. Would be great. Talk about $2 a month, guys. I mean, come on. Most people give more than $2 a month for this information, valuable, reliable information that I give to you. I'm only asking for $2 a month. Like I said, most people give more than that. But anyways, patreon.com or go to podbean.com, contraradio.podbean.com, and you will be able to help me keep this rocking and rolling. All right, enough of that. I'm John Jeffers saying thanks for listening today here on the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network. To my prepper and patriot friends, I say to you this: be safe, be alert, and be vigilant. Thanks for listening. We're going to pop up in another episode tomorrow. Thanks. Bye.